Happy holidays, Elise Glink. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's nice to be here, John. Happy holidays to you, too.
I was looking at some of your notes for us today and thought, yeah, I guess it is the time for resolutions, huh?
Yeah, we do this every year, you and I. We talk about things that home buyers should do and home sellers should do and how people should manage their money next year. And this year I added a new one, some housing trends that I see coming down the pike for next year.
Just do that first, if you don't mind, since the rest of this will be some tips for all of us. But in general, what are the trends you're looking at?
I'm definitely seeing the housing shortage continue, and I'm disappointed by this. I really thought that with all the money the Biden administration had been sort of spending to build multifamily housing, to build affordable housing, to even support some of the different kinds of industries that we need for building houses, like, you know, the raw materials of building a house, I thought that we would see an increase. But boy, this year we're just... we're just not even keeping pace with the number of new households being formed. So I think that as long as interest rates are still going to be in that 6-6.5% range, which everybody thinks that's what's going to happen, I think we're going to see the housing shortage continue.
Why is that? To what do you attribute this? Is it supply chain stuff still, or latent supply chain stuff, or what?
I think the problem actually goes back further, John. Think back to 15 years ago when we had the Great Recession. And the Great Recession washed, I don't know how many sort of mom and pop shop developers and builders off the table. They just literally went out of business. And even the big builders had to, like Pulte, had to merge in order to survive. And then it was a long period where they couldn't quite get interest rates where they needed it to be. Land, you know, so many houses were on the market that nobody wanted to, you know, build new ones or invest in new ones. And so even more developers fell away. And so I think we just got in the habit of just not building very many houses. And we had fewer builders to build those houses. And a lot of the energy went into, this is when you started to see over the last 7 or 8, you know, 9 years, we started to see all the really big hurricanes and a lot of destruction around flooding and wildfires. And so a lot of the energy for building went into rebuilding rather than adding to the housing stock. And I just think all of that is added up into a very big problem. And so until we figure out how to build 2+ million homes a year in this country, we're not going to eat away at this housing shortage.
You also, among other trends, are looking at what you think will be an uptick in interest rates. Why? While the Fed's poised to cut it down at least once here in December, and I think folks are expecting a few next year, what are you thinking about?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, we are going to see, I think, the Fed make a move now. The problem is, I think the bond markets worry about debt. And so a lot of what we're seeing come down the pike, the political uncertainty with the new administration, are we going to have tariffs? Are we not going to have tariffs? Are we going to add a huge amount of debt to what we're already paying off in this country, or are we not? I think there's so much uncertainty as to which way it's going to go that interest rates, the bond market is still keeping interest rates at that 6% or above level. I think another concern for the bond market, the traders that I've talked to over the last, I would say, month since the election, is, you know, are we going to see Elon Musk really cut trillions of dollars off, you know, our budget? And it sounds great, right? In theory, like, oh, well, we just won't spend that money. But in practice, that money goes to pay people's livelihoods. Like, that's their jobs. So if we get rid of the post office and we privatize it, that's a lot of people who will lose their jobs. If we get rid of the Department of Education, a lot of people will lose their jobs. Now, you could argue maybe they should lose their jobs. But when you start pushing unemployment and you're pushing that number up and up and up, that's a lot of people, families who are struggling. And I think that there's some concern in the bond market about what that looks like, too.
I think everybody's for cut. I think everybody thinks the federal government is too big. And besides, we don't have the money to support it. And I count me amongst them. I don't know anybody who wouldn't agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad you made the point you just did, because I think when they say we're going to cut the Department of Education or the IRS, it sounds like it's just a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. who are superfluous. The Department of Education funnels monies to states and local school districts. So it's It's that extra kindergarten teacher you all need. It's the music teacher. It's the SICA over at my son's high school. It's all of these other staff positions, which are funded in part through federal dollars. Maybe not the best or most efficient way to use money, send it to Washington, D.C., and then, you know, have it all trickle back. But that's what we do. If we just hammer those departments, you're going to see widespread measures of unemployment throughout the country. And Elon Musk will tell you that I'm right and that that's the price he's willing for us to pay. We need to do this. It'll be very painful, he said. Okay, I'll stop talking now. But I mean, I'm just glad that you made the point that it's not just bureaucrats sitting in desks in Washington, D.C. or working from home.
No, it's definitely not. And I have to just say that while I do think there's some cuts that are inevitable and some cuts that probably should happen, cutting the IRS is a silly thing to do because that's how we get the tax money in. That's where the revenue comes
from.
That's
the one thing that would net positive. It's
right.
Like if we get more people doing that, we make more money. And you know who we're going to get it from? We're going to get it from people who should be paying in and aren't. So I can't get my head around that one.
Yeah, me either. But there are some really interesting trends that we're going to see. Like, for example, you'll see more office buildings being converted to residential use, or at least talk about that. You're going to see more 3D printed homes next year and new developments in that.
Do you think people are going to work from home or work from the office next year?
Oh, gosh, I think work from home isn't changing, but I do think they're going to have to show up a little bit more than they're already doing.
We're talking to Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media. By the way, you were talking about housing trends in the new year, Elise. Hey, John, Elise, on housing, Airbnb is a problem. Our little town of Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, has 700 homes around us for rent, driving prices six times what we paid, and many are bought from investors. Our neighbors make $80,000 a year renting their house with a pool. It's very profitable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are, between VRBO and Airbnb, that has become a real issue. And there have been some attempts by different governments, local governments like the city of New York, to really crack down on that kind of thing. There was some number, I'm not looking at it right now, but I'm just trying to remember, but there is some number that 20% or 18% of all housing units are actually vacant across the country.
Right. Yeah, sitting there waiting for somebody to, for a weekend, use them.
Exactly.
2025 personal finance resolutions. What are you making or suggesting we make?
Well, I think that given what we were just talking about with Elon Musk possibly throwing, I don't know how many, tens of millions of people out of jobs, I think you want to tighten your belt wherever you can. I mean, you know, inflation has really got people thinking about money and about achieving some personal finance goals, and coming up with that emergency fund has got to be, you know, a priority, I think. So tightening your belt, you know, try to just kind of rein it in a little bit. I know this holiday season, boy, everybody is feeling like they want to gift everybody else, but you know, maybe just make it a little bit more significant, but cut back on some of the little things that you spend money on. The other thing I would say to people is if you can't tighten your belt any more than you can, look for ways to bring in more money. So there are some, I don't know, probably 500 plus different ways to make some extra cash at a website run by a former LA Times columnist, Kathy Kristoff. It's called sidehustle.com, S-I-D-E-H-U-S-L. And they've reviewed almost 500 different kinds of ways to make extra income. And some of them will work for you and some not. But she's got a nice little quiz that helps direct you to some of the best ones. And every week she writes about new things that have come on, new ways, even things like, it's silly, John, but you can make money by playing games online. So
if you're good at it, maybe. I don't know if anybody, that's where somebody watches you play a video game online. Is that what that is?
No, not like that. More that there are companies that are testing engagement and they are working for other companies. And so they want to engage you. And so there's games that they offer. Kathy writes about this on the website. You can go there and take a look at some of the different options. And some pay by the hour, some pay by the day. She's got people, if you think your house or your neighborhood or you're living in Lake Geneva and you have a beautiful view and somebody might want to rent that for a photo shoot or a movie or a local video ad, there are places that you can list your property or other things online. It was just lots of crazy things that you might not have thought of on your own that could help bring in an extra $100 or $200 a month, and that might be really useful.
Sidehustle.com is SIDEHUSL, hustle, sidehustle.com.
Yeah.
Keep going. You got time for a couple more?
Yeah, of course. So another one is raise your credit score. So we were talking about just how high I think interest rates will stay. And really, it's the not just me, but in the larger real estate industry, the housing economists are all looking at around 6% interest rate this year for 2025, and maybe even into 2026, as much as 6.5%, depending on what happens with the deficit. But for you, raising your credit score, it's a good idea to just take a look at, you know, kind of where you are with how many credit cards you have. And maybe you are just sort of adding new ones on, so you get a discount here, a discount there. That's a good way to lower your score. But the best thing you can do is to log into Experian.com, Equifax.com, and TransUnion.com. Those are the three major credit reporting agencies. Their websites offer a free account. You don't have to put in a credit card, even though Experian will press you to do that any number of times. But you don't have to. And what it'll do is give you your credit score and your credit report, and it'll allow you some other tools to sort of look at and measure your credit history and what you're doing with credit.
Yeah.
And it's a great idea to do that. And then it's very, very secure. So, you know, once you're on the site and you're looking at it, you know that that's the real story.
ThinkLink.com has the personal finance resolutions. Elise has also posted home buyer resolutions. You're going to buy a house in 2025. I had to chuckle at number one buyer resolution. Save more money than you think you'll need. Trust me, you'll need it.
I know. It's hard. You know, people forget that in addition to the down payment, you need 3 months of cash reserves, your mortgage, taxes, and insurance premium in the bank, and you're going to need enough to pay your moving expenses. And so that's without even counting all the money you want to spend on painting, carpeting, drapes, blinds, cleaning equipment, furniture. All that takes cash too. So definitely save more than you think in 2025 for whatever the use is. And you know what, John? If you don't end up needing it, it just gets to go in the bank and then you earn money on it.
Well, I thought you had to throw it away. If you have extra money at the close, like that's ever happened to anybody.
Yeah, or burning it is another option if you just have too much money.
We were at a closing one time, one of the first houses we bought, and the numbers did not match up perfectly. And one side of the ledger was like $1.78 different than the other. And the whole deal's off if they don't square up perfectly. So everybody's slapping their pockets trying to find $1.78. And we cobbled together like $1.50. And then we pushed it to the other side of the table and deal was done. But but it cost more money than we thought. I was $1.78 short, no fault of my own. Elise Glink has all this good wisdom at thinkglink.com. Best Money Moves is her business, too. We'll talk again next week. Thank you, Elise.
All right. You bet, John.
Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. They keep us posted on all things tech, and for that matter, all things investing. IBM's Quantum Computer Research Center is in at least your news. What's the latest in that area there, Jim?
Hey, John. Yeah, big news out of IBM and Chicago. IBM plans to anchor a new research center here in the city, giving another boost to Illinois' effort to become a major quantum computing hub. IBM is joining the quantum computing campus on Chicago's south side, located at the vacant former U.S. Steel site. It's joining DARPA and a Silicon Valley startup, PsiQuantum, which is also building a quantum computing center there on the south side. IBM, as part of this effort, will build a quantum computer in Chicago. The company says they plan to install the computer next year and have about 50 people initially working in Chicago. This investment from IBM, the company says, you know, could reach the low hundreds of millions of dollars. It's That's kind of the price point, really, for building these major quantum computers. And so a big boost of confidence for that quantum hub here in Chicago. The city and the state are really bullish in that area of technology. And we're going to see a lot of momentum throughout the year. And it looks like we're going to see some continued momentum in quantum in the years to come.
What do they use those for? Do they, if IBM builds it, then will they take contracts from the government or companies who need a certain computation or piece of information, and that's how they then make money on the investment? Is that the deal?
Yeah, and you know, part of the reason that IBM chose Chicago is that there are a lot of companies here that can benefit from the power of quantum computing, especially, you know, one area is healthcare. So, you know, in Chicago in the Midwest, you know, lots of healthcare businesses, you know, lots of hospital systems, you know, and one area of quantum computing that has, you know, the ability to really, really be kind of revolutionary and groundbreaking is, you know, curing diseases, you know, bringing new drugs to market. You know, what these quantum computers can do is basically solve math problems much, much, much faster than what current computers can currently do. And so, you know, that's really at the basis for, you know, new drug discovery, for example. So the hope is that, you know, health institutions can plug into quantum computing and start solving diseases and getting, you know, in a new revolutionary drugs to market faster.
Yeah, we've got Boeing. Is Boeing's headquarters still here? Would they be a possible kind of contract for them as well?
Yeah, that's certainly possible. You know, any kind of business that really needs to solve, you know, complex math problems, even a business like Boeing, you know, can, you know, figuring out the flight trajectory and the flight paths, you know, all sort of optimal travel times. That's actually something quantum computing can play a role in as well, kind of creating optimal scheduling. You know, it seems like something that, you know, somebody could tackle, right? But it would take, you know, hours and hours to find the most optimal routes for every plane that's going in every direction. Quantum computing can do that a lot faster. And so, you know, we've got some real momentum here in quantum, and it's an area that, you know, the state officials, especially J.B. Pritzker, are hoping that, you know, it really cements Chicago's legacy as a tech hub. You know, the state and the city have long been kind of at the forefront of new technologies. You know, Marc Andreessen created the earliest, you know, internet web browser, you know, out of the University of Illinois, and then left the state to go build that business out in the valley. And so, you know, leaders here are hoping that quantum computing can begin in Illinois and stay here and be a driving force for economic development here in the state of Illinois for years to come.
Yeah, right. You mentioned the National Quantum Algorithm Center here. That's different than the Great Lakes Innovation Accelerator, right?
Yeah, so the Great Lakes Innovation Accelerator, this is a new program that's really focused on water innovation here in Chicago and in the Northern Illinois region. It's a program launched by Wisconsin startup accelerator Generator. Generator has been a longtime startup investor in the Midwest, really all over the country. And they're going to be anchoring this new project, which recently landed some new federal funding, about $13.4 million. To fund water-based startups here in the area. So they're going to invest in about 60 startups over the next 4 years, providing $100,000 in non-dilutive funding to each startup. It's really working on, you know, new initiatives that are addressing the climate crisis, you know, better access to water, cleaner water. You know, we've talked about this before, right? But, you know, Chicago's proximity to the Lake Michigan here is really an advantage for, you know, lots of water-related startups, and, you know, lots of companies are launching and getting funding to kind of improve access to the quality water. And so this is yet another initiative and endeavor to get some money into hands of water-based founders.
One more company or area for you to catch us up on today, NanoGraph. Tell me about them.
Yeah, NanoGraph. This is a real interesting startup, fast-growing battery startup here in Chicago. They released a new product called Onyx. Developed specifically for electric vehicles. So basically what their technology is it's a material called silicon anode, and it delivers a dramatically improved experience for lithium-ion batteries. And so this technology is going to be plugged right into its existing facility, which is just announced in Flint, Michigan, where it's going to be making batteries for electric vehicles. They've received $60 million in federal funding to get this new facility off the ground. in Flint, Michigan. But, you know, their headquarters is here in Chicago, and they have a lot of research and development happening right here in the city as well. And so NanoGraph is really going to be one of these kind of main players that's powering the electric vehicle industry. And, you know, these EVs are looking for, you know, more and better improvements to their battery making process. And that's really what NanoGraph's bread and butter is all about.
And the battery was the Achilles heel we thought of EVs, right? That the cars just would not be able to go far enough to make them viable or as viable as they can be. I know the industry has sort of swung back the other way, but most analysts I talk to say that's temporary until infrastructure and other issues catch up. But the big deal was, how do we get a battery? And it just seems like over and over again, the technology has made the batteries more and more efficient, more and more powerful.
That's right. And they're getting better. So I think that's, you know, that's sort of the push and pull of the industry is that, you know, I think so many are looking to see the EV industry accelerate faster than it has. You know, the consumer adoption, you know, really hasn't quite been to the caught up to the area that many were hoping. But I think what we're going to see is, you know, in terms of electrification, it's not if, it's when. We are headed that way, and the technology is improving. And NanoGraph is really kind of an example of that, showing that, you know, these you know, powerful batteries are becoming more powerful.
Yeah, I can read about that and more. Well, throughout Chicagoland, actually, Jim Dahlke is the director of communications at the Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. TechNexus.com is the website. Nice to talk to you, Jim. Thanks for helping us out today.
Thanks, John.
More news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Dave Schwann. Dave?
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. With about a week and a half before Christmas, there's talk of a strike among Teamsters at Amazon. Two New York warehouses voted to strike after Amazon didn't negotiate a new contract. The union called on Amazon to agree to bargaining dates by December 15th. Amazon says the Teamsters union is misleading the public and promoting false narratives. A two-day meeting by the Federal Reserve starts tomorrow, talking interest rates. We'll know Wednesday if rates will be cut. If so, it'll be the third and final rate cut of the year. Most economists expect a reduction of a quarter of a percentage point. No holiday gift with gas prices. Gas Buddy's weekly survey of Chicago stations shows average prices went up 9 cents in the last week and nearly 10 cents higher than a year ago. The average price, $3.37. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And Vicki Gainsburg is on the phone. What do you do for a living, Vicki?
I work at the University of Chicago outpatient clinics, and I'm a registered dietitian. I specialize in pediatrics and gastroenterology.
Excellent, because I've got questions about whether children ought to be given fake milk, the plant-based stuff, after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, there's a new fake milk on store shelves, Silk Kids, the brand's first ever plant-based beverage for children. And I'm not picking on Silk, but overall, does the question of whether kids should be given fake milk come up very much in your practice, Vicki, at the University of Chicago?
Oh my God, all the time.
And good idea or a bad idea?
I personally don't recommend them unless it's like necessary for a severe like milk allergy. This one is not superior to cow's milk at all. And none of them, I feel like, are superior.
And she says they try to imitate cow's milk by adding stuff.
They add pea protein to that beverage. And then also they add some sugars. And if you see, there's some seed oils in there. There's some gums. And then the absorption of like adding all these things into the milk isn't as high as like a regular cow's milk.
And while Silk Kids is supposed to be for kids 5 and older.
I get kids, these families coming in, their kids are like 1 and they're like failure to thrive. And they're on almond milk. It's low protein. It's like 35 calories. And I'm like, what? Like, why? Why are you doing? Like, they're just naive and their kids aren't growing. They're not gaining weight because at that age, they're like really depriving them of a, like really good nutrition that they need from regular milk.
And there are parents who think if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for their kids.
No, absolutely not. Especially the young ones, like the 2, 3, 4, even 5-year-olds. You know, I always have to like make sure that they read the ingredients, read the nutrition label to make sure that there is a good source of calcium.
And the bottom line, remember,
this is a marketing scheme here. I'm sure the price of it is like even more because it's kids' Silk oat milk. It's 100% marketing.
Vicki Gainsburg, a registered dietitian specializing in pediatrics at the University of Chicago's outpatient clinic. On the food calendar, I'm not sure she would approve, but it's National Chocolate Covered Anything Day. That's the Business of Food. I'm Steve Alexander on 720 WGN.
Rob Foytek is the Vice President of Neighborhood Strategies at Choose Chicago. Let's talk about ways to do Chicago besides Aurora there. Rob, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for having me.
How is Chicago, the city, and the neighborhoods doing this holiday?
Well, you know, this is when our city really comes alive. There are so many amazing, iconic events that happen throughout our beautiful city, whether that's the Chris Kindle Market and Millennium Park Tree. But really, we try to get folks, whether they're visitors or locals, to get out and explore our neighborhoods as well.
So give me some highlights. What are you thinking about?
Well, you know, this year we've sponsored 10 different neighborhood events. Some of them have happened already, but some are still ongoing. Coming up on the 21st of December, there's two different events folks can enjoy. Miracle on 63rd Street down in Inglewood. They've got an ice skating rink. And then over in Little Village, they've got a holiday trolley that's going around to different parts of the neighborhood for really great opportunities to buy some gifts, especially those last-minute gifts from some mom-and-pop shops. And then if your holiday season is really booked up through the new year, you can go over to Humboldt Park on January 6th for Three Kings Day, which is a great celebration, of course, of the wise men showing up. And so you can get information on all of that, as well as events across the city at choosechicago.com.
Chris Kindle Market is doing gangbuster business again, isn't it?
Oh, always is. You know, it's such a great event and it's so festive. You know, when it's cold out, nothing does better than a hot glass of mulled wine.
Yeah. And that's at the Daily Plaza there, right downtown. There was its sister market over at Wrigley Field. That's not there this year, though, is it?
That's not happening this year, but the one downtown is still there. And then, you know, really folks can get out and explore. They don't just have to go downtown. I live up on the far north side in Andersonville. We've got some amazing small businesses with great gift opportunities. Transit Tees, Alley Cat, Four-Sided, all have some really cool stuff. I bought a really unique little ornament at Four-Sided the other day for my niece.
Yeah.
But then on the far south side in Hyde Park, 57th Street Books, my buddy Eric over at the Silver Room, all some really cool, unique opportunities to show the ones you love how much you care.
We went up to Andersonville over the weekend, and I was reminded of what a fun area that is to shop in. It's just a really pretty street, and they are local shops up and down. What was it, Clark? I guess we were on, and we spent time at Simon's Tavern, by the way, which is
I love it.
It's just
very good.
Boy, what a genuine tavern. No food, really neat decorations. It's not too much. It's perfect. Simon's Tavern, and then we ate at Tala, which is a nice restaurant there in town too. You can't go wrong in Andersonville.
You really can't. Did you have a glass of glug at Simon's? It's that time of year here.
I know. Well, the ladies had the glug, and then my buddy and I, we got a brown drink. I got an old fashioned, and that was pretty damn good too, to be honest with you.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Well, you know, no matter where you are in the city, always recommend checking out the local stores. We have some really amazing neighborhood guides on our website as well at choosechicago.com. And so anytime you're finding yourself in a new part of the city or wanting to explore a new part of the city, it's a really great resource.
Yeah, no kidding. And one last note, I completely agree with you about the neighborhoods, but if you're going to do the big city, Millennium Park is lovely this time of year, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. You know, again, Chicago shines at Christmas, whether that's in iconic movies we grew up with, or in visiting downtown ourselves these days. You know, there's the ice skating rink, there's the tree, carolers out, everything is decorated. And it's really just, it's such a beautiful sight. And, you know, with these milder days, you don't even have to bundle up as much.
Yeah, as much as I'd like to maybe see some snow on the ground, I think I can deal with 45 degrees on a weekend. There's also Three Kings Day in Humboldt Park on January 6th. So you've got all of this on your landing page, right?
All of it's on there. Yeah, these events as well as others across the city, links to small businesses, really a one-stop shop for anybody who's looking for something to do or looking for some last-minute gift giving.
Choose Chicago. Why not? ChooseChicago.com. ChooseChicago.com. Rob Foytek, nice to talk to you again.
Love
Let's stay in touch.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy holidays.